Coming up on today's show...
You have to make the time. It's like you schedule the performance, you schedule everything else because it's still part of your job.
Tell me what you think you're doing. Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from San Antonio, Texas, my guest is a singer, songwriter, guitar player who has performed throughout the U.S. and Europe. Highlights of the original music he has released include international hits on the iTunes charts, a Spotify editorial playlist, and the Top 40 Roots Music Report and Indie World Report. In addition, videos from two of his songs have been nominated and selected for numerous film festivals. His top five songs on Spotify alone have gotten a combined 1.2 million streams, and a single that he released last August won Favorite Mainstream Single in the 2023 Independent Music Network Awards. You've been hearing a song of his called Humanity? Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Jeremy Parsons.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's so good to be here. It's always interesting to hear the highlights laid out like that.
Well, thank you so much for making time to speak with me today. Let's get started by having you share with the audience all about the song of yours that was just playing called Humanity, especially since I was talking over it and they couldn't hear the lyrics clearly.
Yeah, no, Humanity was one of those that it manifested during that crazy time that we all call the pandemic. Mm. I was sitting there in my room. All of our shows had gotten canceled, so we had too much free time to really observe and, you know, break down all the, you know, our own mentality and view what was happening via the news, which was all just madness, whether it was like election stuff or, you know, all the stuff with BLM and everything. And it was very heavy. And I feel like my coping mechanism my entire life has always been writing. It's been my therapeutic craft. So I sat down and all the questions that I had internally kind of came out of me via the guitar part that, you know, manifested itself. And my producer and I were talking, and part of it started because he sent me a Beatles track, and he was like, man, it's cool how they go from a major to a minor here, which like in the verses were in the key of D, mm-hmm. and then the choruses would switch to a D minor.
Mm.
And so I was like, that is interesting. So I started messing around with that, and that was one of the big formulas for writing Humanity. Is I'd never done anything like that where it just shifted to the minor version of the root note. That was a lot of it, and it seemed emotionally perfect as I was writing it for the context of the song, because it switches from these questions in the verse to this the chorus going to like the bigger, harder questions of like what, calling myself out, calling people out in general, calling humanity out. Mm. Like, you know, what have we become? What are we doing here? You know, it was a good write for me in multiple ways. You know, you don't wish stuff like that'll happen, even if it inspires you. But like, if it does happen and it does inspire you, like, why not, you know, use that fuel and write something that, you know, hopefully it means something to somebody someday, or they'll be able to get something from it, or be like, okay, I feel the same way, man. Thank you for writing this.
It would seem like, because of the topic, the question I'm about to ask you maybe it just kind of answers itself. But when you come up with that concept, Jeremy, for that song, do you go through a period where you think, okay, because of what the subject matter is, do I want to make this a protest song? Do I want to make it a ballad? Do I want to make it angry? Or is it, you already answered your own question, Bruce, it just kind of sorts itself out by its nature?
It does. It comes out how it's supposed to come out. And like, there's very few times where I do a rewrite. And there's like, I usually know, if you whittle down who you are as an artist, like the voice is already there. So everything kind of comes out packaged as you. And I've never been someone who's like politically in your face, but like, they're just, and the song isn't very specific. I usually like to border on, you know, being kind of obvious if you're paying attention, but broad enough to where it could like apply to multiple things. Cause I like that delivery more. It leaves it wide open for more people to receive it in a certain sense. And, you know, maybe people to receive it who aren't really good at receiving stuff like that, you know, that might be a little bit more proud than others.
Interesting.
Or not quite ready to admit certain things to themselves. You know, you want to leave the gaps for everybody to grow.
Yeah. While at the same time, for a topic like that, clearly this is not going to be a happy song that you use major chords all throughout and, you know, are smiling as you're singing, because it is heavy subject matter. So you did a nice job there of describing it. And I'm deducing from what you're saying or what you're not saying that clearly you must have written this by yourself. I mean, it was the pandemic, and sure, you could have done a write over Skype or Zoom or whatever, but it sounds like you did this all on your own.
Right. Most of the songs, the lyrics and melody are all written by me. And, you know, there's another writer's credit on there for Dustin Martin, who is my producer. He gets a writer's credit because it's the way that we're doing production is done in the same setup as the way they do pop songs. Like, a lot of the writers on there are just listed as writers because the way that they produced it was so pivotal to how the track ended up flowing. His voice is on there too via the production, and we talked about it multiple times. And like I said, I've never really split a writer's credit like that, because like, I've always just done it myself and then gone in the studio and recorded it as is. But he put such his own unique flair on there that it just seemed wrong to exclude him as a writer, because the tracks wouldn't flow the way they did without him. You know, he's basically doing like this is a high praise comparison, but what Michael Jackson and Quincy Jones did with a lot of those, like Quincy was like so pivotal in the production of those tracks.
Yeah.
Obviously not the same, you know, they're.
No, I get it. That's a good comparison, though, because, like you said, it is very unique, and this isn't something that we hear about very often, but at the same time, it sounds like it was so collaborative that it just makes sense to give him a writing credit.
Right. Yeah, it wouldn't be this. Y'all would be hearing a completely different project without him, and he deserves that recognition.
Well, I really meant it when I said that I appreciate you carving out time in your schedule today to talk with me, because you are actually performing today at South by Southwest. Congratulations on that. And tell me, is this your one and only South by Southwest show of 2024, or is it your second, your third? And is this your first year performing at South by Southwest, or have you performed at it previously?
So thank you for that. It's my third year, and I make it a rule to do at least one show for South by Southwest, and I usually try to get it in as early as I possibly can, because I'm always booked like Friday through Sunday and sometimes Thursday through Sunday. Like this week, the only day I have off is tomorrow. But like, South by Southwest is cool, and it's a cool networking experience for us. Like, it seems foolish not to participate, but it's also like, if you've gone, it's wild, and it's always during spring break for some people, and this year everybody had spring break at the same time. So it's, you know, it's one of those things. It's good to do it. I have a capacity as far as like crowds and stuff like that, but I love it, and it's a good way to put yourself out there. And it's, you know, it's a big event, and it's fairly close to home for me. It's only about an hour and a half drive.
Explain the rationale. Why do you just limit yourself to doing one? I know you have other bookings, but is it South by Southwest doesn't pay you, or it's they pay but not as much as I can make at my other gigs, or I've just done it enough times that one is enough? What's your rationale behind saying, I'll do one, but I don't need two or three or four?
Right. So the rationale is just you must be present to win. So showing up for one show is usually enough, and they don't pay at all for the shows. It's one of those deals, like it makes sense to, book yourself in on a day where you're not booked anywhere else. But if you can go and make money elsewhere, I'm not going to take a Friday or a Saturday off to, like it's a good networking deal, but it's also a madhouse. It's blown up like all the other festivals. And like I said, if you make yourself present and you show up on a flyer somewhere, it's like you participated in South by Southwest. So you're not just, poo-pooing the whole event or something. But, Austin is busting at the seams a majority of the time anyway. But South by Southwest, and like I said, with the emergence of the spring break travelers and everything too, which it just gets wild. So it's about all that I can tolerate is one show, I should say. Yeah.
But let's face it, you do have the luxury of only being 90 minutes away. I live in Tampa, so if a performer from Tampa is going to go all the way to Austin, they probably are going to be more up to say, I know I'm not going to get paid, but you know what? I'll go there for 3 or 4 days, meet a ton of people, play multiple shows, try to get as much exposure, as many contacts, and experience the whole thing as I can, as opposed to you that can just drive down there, play the show, and come back the same night.
Exactly. No, and that should be like what you do. And honestly, like if anyone's looking for advice within that statement, I would suggest put like maybe booking some South by shows and then reach out to other venues that are near or surrounding Austin, like, San Marcos, which is a suburb, or New Braunfels, which is a little further south of San Marcos in Austin, or Dripping Springs, some area like that. Reach out to a venue and also see if you can get yourself paid for the travel. Like reach out to those venues and see if they have an open date.
Yeah, great advice. Great advice.
Get yourself some gas money,
For those who are just being introduced to you for the first time, tell us about getting your start in music back in high school. Because when I think of that scene, I think of a couple guys in particular who I knew were doing music back when we were all in high school. And one of them actually still is, but the other I have no idea about. So it's helpful to have something to compare it to, meaning that we probably all know or knew someone who did music in high school, but then eventually dropped it. So tell us, Jeremy, about your start in music back in high school.
I was really big into sports for years, and then when I got to high school, like I was still passionate about it, but the high school mentality of playing sports was that you would, you could start coaxing, a teenager who, didn't have, firm grasp on certain ideals, like about like, oh, you could possibly, get a college scholarship or go pro. And like, I didn't care about that stuff. So that type of motivation, the harsh, like, do you want to be a quitter? And I was like, you're kind of making it more and more of a desire every day with your attitude, because they don't talk to you nicely. I showed up and I did the work as an athlete because I enjoyed it. But it wasn't like something I was going to kill myself to do. It's because it was fun. I was hanging out with my friends and we were having a good time until, a coach came around that I wasn't really a fan of. So I walked off of sports and I was looking for another hobby. And there was an old guitar lying around the house. And I was like, well, I mean, I've always enjoyed music. I've gone to concerts, I never, but never considered like picking up a guitar and, immersing myself in the craft, or like even considered writing a song or singing. Like I would sing to the radio, but, I picked up that guitar and something clicked. It was just the timing of it. I was like 17 years old and I was like, oh, well, it's, this is fun. And then it got to, I'd come home from school every day. I'd practice, got good at chord formations and started singing. And then, by the time I was a senior in high school, I was playing out at writers' nights and had started writing my own songs. And, anytime a school project came up and I could find a way that I could write a song for it instead of like actually doing some other kind of like tedious work that I didn't enjoy, like I would try to find ways to infuse that. And then I realized that I was somehow getting good at it. It was becoming something that I was like, I wanted to get better at it. I was enjoying it so much that it wasn't something that I was like hard on myself on. It was something that was like, I was joyous every time I could like even come up with a song idea. And then when I'd write a song, I was like through the roof. It all just unraveled from there. And then,
but let me just jump in here because I want to clarify. So was this all quote unquote on your own time, or were you also, say, part of the band at school?
We didn't have a band. I went to a very small school. We didn't have a band.
Interesting.
Like, it was my graduating class was like 15 people.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So like if we didn't have enough people at the school that wanted to do something, like we couldn't do it.
I see.
Like when I showed up to the school, I wanted to play soccer, but there wasn't enough people that wanted to play soccer. So I ended up playing 6-man football.
Wow.
Like that's a great example. So like we didn't even have a band. There was a few guys around there, like one dude played the drums, and like I would go over to his house and like jam, but it was never, I like the solo acoustic thing. It's more intimate. You have control of the show. You don't have to worry about, if other members can show up to a gig, like travel's easier. You know, you have that one-on-one with the audience in between songs or even during songs.
You don't have to split.
But yeah,
the day.
That's also good. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you don't have to look for anybody after a show.
So over the years, I have been fortunate to get listeners to this show from 163 countries around the world. As we have people continue to get to know you, talk about who your influences were and/or are, have been, all of the above.
Yeah, well, in Texas, like I was very immersed with, like, Bob Wills was huge down here. Like, George Strait, of course, who, like, you know, mm-hmm. I grew up in San Antonio and live in San Antonio, and he lives right down the road in Bernie. So I grew up really listening to him. But, like, the first guy that really hooked me as far as vocals and songwriting was Hank Williams Sr.
Mm.
When I was a kid, I heard the song Kalijah, which is about a wooden Indian. And I just thought that was, like, the coolest, like, funniest thing in the world. And I loved that song. And then he was always, like, my dude, like, my main inspiration. And through that, discovered guys like John Prine and some of the newer writers like Jason Isbell. And a few people emerged from there. But, like, it's always been the singer-songwriters for me that I really connected to. Because they always saw the world in such their own unique ways and were able to like give it back to you and this really just awesome, like, you know, those guys that just deliver lines to you and you're like, man, that's great, that's a great line, you know, like the poetry of it all, like, you know, Hank Williams is I'm so lonesome I could cry. You're like, this is, you know, this is art, this is beautiful poetry. You read those lyrics without the music, it's just a, like, this beautiful poem and, like, written by a dude who, like, dropped out of the fifth grade. Like,
wow.
It's awesome. Like, you know, that's a gift. Those guys have a magnetism. And, like, you know, John Prine is another great example. He had this really cool way of almost being, like, morbidly hilarious at times. And you're like, you shouldn't be able to get away with saying something like that and it just be like, okay, but he could just do it. He's like, drop these bombs on you, like, make you laugh, make you cry. Like, they really get to the heart of existence.
Well, and so it's no surprise that you mentioned Jason Isbell, since he's kind of a protege of John Prine. So all these people, we can see how they kind of fit together. And it goes back to what you were describing earlier when you were in high school and you just latched onto songwriting. Clearly, as you started to listen to the Hank Williams and the John Prines of the world, you were listening very differently from the average person who just enjoys music. You were listening for the craft. You were listening to the messaging. You were listening how the song was being written, and that was influencing you to do everything that we're going to be talking about that you've done.
You know, and I think that I still look for that in, like, younger artists. You're always looking for that individuality in that person, like someone who is so much themselves that you just want to hear more about them being themselves. And because that, like, their perception becomes so important to you because it's so unique. Like, they are themselves. That's how they see things. Like, what they're giving you is their piece of the pie, but it's also a life experience that we all share in a certain way, but they're just delivering it differently. It's really cool.
I like that you say that because it is important that people bring something new and different and fresh to the table instead of coming out with, I always like to say that if so-and-so and so-and-so had a baby, that's who I would be. It's like, okay, come on. Everybody says that. Just be yourself and stop comparing who you think you should be in the same breath with, who you think your music sounds like, because you're taking the originality out of it the more that you start bringing in all these people. A lot of people tell me I sound like this one, or I write just like so-and-so. Well, how about sounding like yourself and writing like yourself?
Right. That should be the priority. But for a lot of people, like, the industry has handed you these molds, and people try to fit themselves into them because they think that will, like, breed the same success. But, like, there's no pattern to the industry. There's nothing, like, it's ever-changing. Like, you know, before Spotify, everything was completely different. Like, before TikTok, everything was completely different.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to keep changing. You just have to do you and be content with what you're doing. And if something great happens in that process, then that's just a plus, but you always have something that you're passionate about either way.
Well said. Well said. I said that you are calling in from San Antonio, and you were telling us a few minutes ago about playing at South by Southwest, which is in Austin, but I mentioned in the intro that you have actually performed throughout Europe. I have so many questions for you. When was that? Over what period of time did you do that? What countries did you perform in? And how did you find the crowds to be over there, including what you might have noticed different from American audiences?
So we went to, like, London for, like, a couple nights, and that was awesome. And then we hopped over to Norway, a place called Stavanger, which I don't know if I'm saying that right, but it's how it's spelled, and I don't know. But it was cool. We stayed there for probably about a week and a half and bounced back and forth from different towns and played multiple shows. Basically, we played One Direction and then came back and played the other. Like, we did two nights at the same spots, like, going and coming, which is really cool setup. It was beautiful. We went, I think it'll be 10 years this October, the last time I was able to make it over there. I didn't know that, but somebody messaged me the other day from over there and sent me the pictures. They're like, you remember 2014? I was like, is that when it was? Holy cow. So the timing of the question is good, because you asked me like 10 days ago, I wouldn't have known. Yeah, it was awesome. The crowds were some of the best crowds I've ever had. When you're playing, they're dancing. When you're talking in between songs, they're just standing there staring at you, like listening, like taking in every word. Imagine like a honky-tonk crowd that's also a listening crowd.
Wow.
It's a unique experience, and they love live music, especially the original stuff. They like it when you play older stuff too, but they eat up originals, and it's so great for someone who likes, like me, who's like, all I want to do is play, you know, those original songs for you and introduce you to my music and, you know, tell you about myself and tell you about my experiences and what I think and feel. And they're there for it every time. And I've heard that from multiple artists who have played over there.
Yeah, I was wondering if you were able to find out, are they always like that when it's one of their own? Or is it, well, this is an American, so we're going to hang on his every word and listen and engage. But it sounds like you're saying, oh, they're always like that, regardless of who it is.
Yeah, I think they just appreciate the live music. I think it's more of a special experience for them, like when we get to come over like from the States, because they're hearing something that's not, you know, right at their doorstep normally.
Yeah.
But like everybody who goes over, and I've actually never heard, you know, a bad thing about it. It was a magical experience for me. And we went right at the right time too. We got to like go up the fjords, like the free time that you have in the day, you get to walk around like the villages and stuff. And like, it's literally like old villages that they've just maintained. It's beautiful. And it wasn't too cold, which is what I was worried about. So it was perfect weather. So I lucked out. I would love to do it again too. I want to go to more places as well, but like Norway was fantastic. And the UK in general has usually been good to me and my music. So I'd like to bounce around more.
So cool. As it relates to the film festivals I referred to in the intro, I love that you have explored opportunities for your music videos other than just the traditional model of shoot it, get it up on YouTube, promote it for people to go watch there, and then start planning the next one. But tell us, Jeremy, about your affinity for animated music videos.
Yeah, I've always loved cartoons. You know, even as an adult, like, I'll still watch them occasionally. I don't watch as much TV as I used to, but when I need to just sit down and zone out or have something on in the background, like, cartoons are nostalgic and comforting for me. And so when it got to a point, like, I'd done a lot of live action videos, and during the pandemic and stuff, and also I moved back from Nashville, I didn't have a video guy readily available, and especially during the lockdown, it was, you know, no one was doing much of anything. So I was trying to come up with new ideas, and I was like, well, let me explore the animated music video avenue, because I like that, because you can have characters and themes that can still connect. And, like, you know, and I found a guy on Fiverr, of all places, who, he's actually out of Ecuador, and we've become, like, close. He, you know, like, he had a baby recently, and, like, you know, we were talking about it, catching up and stuff. And I'm working on a new single right now that'll hopefully be out, you know, it'll be out sometime this year. I don't want to give a month, because, you know, there's a certain life stuff happens that we just navigate that as it comes. But, you know, I'm still in touch with him about, like, the progress on that. And he's done a fantastic job. He did Humanity and Chicken, and then the Life Worth Dying For music video as well. So he'll do the next single. And I like to continue to use the same people if I can, you know, because if, you know, we're supporting each other, it's the get and give. You know, I can, you know, give you money for your craft, and you can give me a great product like you always do. You know, it's, once I find someone who I know can be consistent, it's important to me to keep them in the family, you know?
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, the guy's doing a good job for you. Why would you look elsewhere?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I like that loyalty. You don't come across that in this industry enough. People will just go to where something that benefits them is. I like the mentality of, you know, keeping everybody like that close, because, you know, everyone's helping everybody. It's a mutually beneficial relationship. And, you know, like you said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Why change anything?
No doubt. No doubt. I'm joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from San Antonio, Texas, by singer, songwriter, guitar player Jeremy Parsons. Visit his official website at jeremyparsonsmusic.com. I will put a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. If you are or will be in San Antonio, look at the shows section of his website, because Jeremy is always performing. In fact, 26 bookings in March. So look for details on where and when you can go see him live in person. You heard a song of his at the beginning, and there will be another played at the end. Support Jeremy by purchasing downloads from the likes of Apple Music and other online digital music retailers. In the store section of his website, you can even order vinyl and CDs of his original music. Do give him a follow on Spotify, but don't just stop there, meaning don't only stream his music. That does not help him pay the bills. Purchase the downloads, purchase the CDs, the vinyl. Social media-wise, he is on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Look for the logos, the links, on jeremyparsonsmusic.com to go follow and engage with him on one or more of those. If I am sounding like a broken record, it's because I must be doing this a lot. But yes, honestly, this morning I was live on the OWL app again. One of the first things that I do when I go live on there is I look to see who else is live on there, just to familiarize myself with other users and, of course, see if any of them are people that I would like to call. The founder of the OWL app, and by the way, that's like the bird except with two W's and two L's, said that when people private message him on LinkedIn, he invites them to call him instead and gives them his link. I've got someone who has just been piling on my LinkedIn private messages these days that I'm about to test that out with, which makes OWL another great resource for you that way. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click anywhere it says home, and then read the article I have posted there under the headline, Help Now a Phone app call away. I have links in there to download OWL for free from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, you will also see my invitation code, which is a required field as you're setting it up on your phone. Download OWL, call me, and call others, and start making valuable connections. Jeremy, at the start of all that, I mentioned the fact that you are outperforming so, so much. For others in the audience who are in the same mode, meaning constantly doing live shows, what is your approach for songwriting and then eventually recording and releasing new music? Meaning, it can get tiring playing night after night after night, and when you're your own boss, it can get real easy to put off working on your own original music. So how do you typically handle that?
I mean, you have to schedule yourself. It's almost like getting older, you have to do that. Like, if I want to even, like, have a date night with my girlfriend, we have to put it in the calendar, because if we can just sit there and watch TV all night, we're going to do it. Like, I literally have to schedule days where I'm like, I'm going to write here because, you know, I'll be vocally rested. I have the whole day off. Like, I can go to the gym in the morning, and then I can, you know, like, coast through the afternoon, maybe do some dishes when I get back from the gym, take a shower, and then I'll go sit on, like, the back patio or another room, and I'll focus on writing. And, you know, I have to accept that maybe, you know, the muses won't be with me that day, and I'll have to just wait till the next time I have more time, because I don't put pressure on it like I used to when I was younger. Like, there was one weekend when I was younger, I locked myself in a room and I wrote 30 songs in one weekend.
Whoa.
Just to see how many songs I could write. Like, Whoa. It was just a test. And, like, I emerged with enough to make an album from that experience. But was everything great? No. And now it's like, I really want to whittle down. It's only the gems. When I have an idea that I'm like, I love this, those go in the top of a note section folder where I'm like, write this, dude. Like, this is where you're at. You need to focus on this. And then there's other stuff that are like maybe that I'll keep in a separate folder that are like, I was kind of on the fence about these at the time, but you never know when you open one of those. If it's just there that day, then you write that one, you know, whether it's a hook or just like a verse or like the first bit of a chorus or something. Like, if it clicks, it clicks, and that's what you're looking for. We're chemically, like, so all over the place as people. So, like, you never know what the day is going to bring your way and what you're going to connect with lyrically, or, you know, even if you're just sitting down and you start noodling out a melody on the guitar and you're like, huh, this feels like it could be something. But it's all about, you have to make the time. It's like you schedule the performances, schedule everything else, because it's still part of your job.
Yeah, I was going to say that when it comes to the recording aspect, as attractive as it is to record yourself these days and everybody has a home studio, the benefit of going to someone else is now you're going to be on their calendar and you can't cancel because they're going to charge you a cancellation fee. So if you put that on your calendar too and say, okay, I've got a recording session, number one, there's accountability in the sense that number two,
right,
you kind of make sure that you're going to have one or more songs ready, whatever you plan to do that day. But even that, I'm piggybacking because I think it's great advice, Jeremy. You know, now you're looking at your calendar, your phone, wherever you keep your schedule, and you go, oh, I'm supposed to be writing for 2 hours today, or oh, I got that recording session a week from Friday, and now you're less apt to say, eh, I'll do that some other time.
Right, right. And if you're just not feeling good, you can always do that, because like you said, you are your own boss. But like, also, like you said, you are your own boss. So that's on you. If you like, and you don't want to miss an opportunity to make yourself feel like you did what you are here to do or supposed to be doing. Because sometimes it'll be like, oh, it's okay, I'll skip today. But then you make yourself feel bad by skipping it. So, like, you know, go out and give it a shot. Like, put it on the calendar, give it a try. If it's not there, it's not there. At least you made the effort, you know. And that's like that's your job. Because, like, you're running your own business. It's really easy to get lazy on yourself. Like, some people can't be their own boss because they need somebody to, you know, point them in a direction. But like, as a musician, like, if you do this full time, you're one of the lucky ones. Like, I get to be one of the lucky ones, but I also work. Like, I do the work. I send the booking emails, You know, I allot the time to write songs, you know, still make time for like family events and like, you know, spring cleaning, fall cleaning, whatever type of cleaning needs to be done. Like, it's all got to work and you're in charge of that. And it's once you get in a flow, once you lock yourself in, it gets to be easier and easier, I would say.
Yeah, and there's something that you mentioned before the break that I want to go back to, which is the fact that you at one point were doing all this in the epicenter of songwriting, which is Nashville. Talk about living in Music City versus living in San Antonio, including when and why you moved back to Texas from Tennessee.
Nashville for me was, it felt necessary. I was there for 10 years. I left like right exactly 10 years,
Wow.
which might have been a little bit too long for me, but I ended up finishing my third project, which was titled Things to Come. And yeah, so I was there from March of 2009 to April of 2019. It was great. I was going to community college in San Antonio and was like a kinesiology major, but like wasn't sure on it because like I said, I always liked sports, but I didn't know what else to do. And music was the only thing that was like, if someone asked me what I wanted to do, that's what I was going to point at. And I was making money at it and I was young. And then I went up to Nashville and I was like, I don't know if I'm good enough to be here. And, you know, I assumed that it was like, just all of these great people, and I went up and played this event, and I won it. I won this event, and I got to open up for George Jones.
Whoa.
Yeah, in Houston, Texas. That was like my first big show, and it was with
Whoa.
like the legendary George Jones. And I was like, after that, I was like, I think that I might be able to do this. Like, the crowd at the George Jones show loved it. Like, Nancy came up to me after the show, his wife, and was like, she was like, you need to move to Nashville. And I was like, okay, I think it's like unanimous at
Wow.
this point. I'm
Wow.
going to try it. And I gave myself like 3 to 6 months. I was like, I'm not going to be one of those dudes who just like bounces around town like desperately. Like, I'm from Texas. I can always come back and just keep playing shows, right? So that was my mentality. I was very realistic about it. And I think people should be like, you know, you run into the wrong person, they'll try to take all your money. And the good news was I didn't have that much money to begin with. So it was.
But what made you decide? How did you know when it was time to move back?
So around 2016, 2017, I started coming back more and playing shows. And as soon as I would cross the state line, every time there was just like this magnetism. And I would get this weird gut feeling, like I was like, this is where you're supposed to be, you know. And I'm like, I've always had that gut feeling. Like when I first moved to Nashville, I was like, this is where you're supposed to be. Like, this is a good place for you to grow and to nurture your craft and your art. And so I did. But then when it got to a point that I felt like the city was taking from me, like I was playing downtown on Broadway and we were just like blowing our voices out, like playing 4 hour sets for like very little pay, for a fraction of the pay that you can make playing an acoustic show in Texas. And so it became this deal where I was like, something has shifted. Like, Nashville and I aren't what we used to be.
Yeah, it sounds like as obvious as it was when you were supposed to go there, it started to be all those same signs telling you it's time to go back to Texas. I like the way that that kind of came full circle.
Exactly. Well, and that's the way that it works. But the ultimate choice is like, do we listen to it? Like, and if we don't listen to it, what happens? You know, and so I went back April of 2019, and like, what happened the next year? Like, if I was still in Nashville during that, I wouldn't have been able to pay rent and stuff. So it was like the timing was perfect because, like, right after I left that year, the tornado came through. Like right after I left, it went like right by my old house. And then there was that bombing down on Broadway. And then the pandemic happened. Like, it was, I was like, okay, it was probably a good time. And I had finished that record and I was sitting on it and I had everything I needed. And I put that out. Like, when they canceled all my shows, I was like, well, I'll just release the record. And it helped me, you know, focus and, you know, keep moving my career forward throughout, you know, that time when we didn't know what we were going to do, you know?
Oof, wow. Wow. 5 weeks ago in the show, we heard Nashville songwriter Blue Foley mention his sobriety once or twice, and I think his business partner Lee Tucker alluded to that on the following episode. Plus, I just feel like I've been talking to and or hearing about more and more people. I'm talking about songwriters, recording artists, who are telling similar stories, and that includes you as well, Jeremy. Congratulations, and share with us about your sobriety.
Thank you. I'm 7 years at this point, which is awesome.
Wow.
It'll be 8 in October of this year, which is, it seems wild. Yeah, you get in that group of, like, there's other musicians who end up, like, sobering up after you, and you're on their call list of when they're having a tough day. I talked to a friend of mine who lives up towards Austin. He called me last night. He was struggling, and we talked for like 2 hours just to get his mind off it and stuff. And we were talking, and it was like, you know, it's interesting. You're starting to hear more and more about it. Like, there was the older generation, like, it's you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, and before that, they just, like, that was the lane that they stayed in and, you know, died of, like, some type of liver failure or heart failure or something like that. And now you're seeing these guys start to, you know, be aware and make the decisions for themselves. It's like, why would I, you know, kill myself when I love what I do? You know, it's like they were killing themselves to do what they love when you could just keep yourself alive longer to keep doing what you love.
I like that.
It's a choice you have to make for yourself and the people you love, because at a certain sense, it's, you know, like, I don't like to bring it up, but, you know, it does come off looking like quite suicidal in a certain sense. And people feel they need to do it to make good art. Like, you have to suffer to make good art. I think it's a young person's mentality, and it's not healthy. Like, you can get away with certain things when you're younger because your body can regenerate. But, like, you get into your 30s and start pushing your 40s, like, you got to make decisions. You should be making those decisions prior to that. But, like, you're a human. You're an artist, but you're still a human. Then you have the soft tissue and bones and stuff that you need to take care of. It's an interesting choice because you battle with that. You see all these people that are, like, they're tormented and they're making these, like, this great art. But it's, like, it's unnecessary.
Well, but similarly, I would love to hear your advice for aspiring performers who are drinkers and are considering, I need to kick this, I need to give it up. What happens, Jeremy, and I'm sure you run into this, I mean, gosh, that many years that you've been sober, I notice a lot of situations where audience members, granted it has to be in the right venue, will walk up to the stage and try to hand the performer, here, I bought you a beer, here, I bought you a mixed drink, whatever it is. And it's one thing to say, you know, sorry, man, I'm sober, you know, but some of these people just get turned off by that and they kind of become, and maybe they've had a few too many themselves. Come on, man, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, or I paid X amount for it. So what is your advice how to handle those situations? Because you don't want to turn off an audience member, but at the same time, you certainly got to stay loyal to your sobriety.
Right, absolutely. And that's what it's about, because their reaction isn't about you, it's about them. That's what you have to realize, is, like, you know, if they want to get upset for you for a choice that you made that was the right choice for yourself and, you know, for everyone around you, you have to stand your ground. You're like, hey, man, I appreciate the gesture, but I can't take that. Give it to, you know, you can have it, or give it to someone else when they want it. Like, I appreciate
that.
It, but, you know, is there a song you'd like to hear? Can I make it up to you? Like, whatever you can do to remedy the situation. But, like, in the bigger picture of things, if they want to be unreasonable, they're going to be. And you can't do anything about that. You're in control of you, not them.
Yeah, great advice.
And, you know, sometimes if you have somebody else on stage, it also doesn't hurt to have somebody else on stage with you that does drink. And you can just give it to them. You know, so it's like, you know, and then, you know, they'd be less butthurt maybe. But, you know, you never know. Like, I say just stand your ground no matter what. But, you know, if you're playing a duo show, that does help, you know?
Okay, good, good. Back in the intro, I mentioned that your top 5 songs on Spotify alone have a combined total of more than 1.2 million streams, and that one of your songs had been added to a Spotify editorial playlist. How intentional are you that way, meaning trying to leverage Spotify any way you can, or has it actually just all been fairly organic?
The one that got playlisted, I was actually, that was a goal of mine when I put out my Things to Come project, the one that I released during the pandemic. Like, I was sitting there and I would like came up with a checklist of stuff that I hadn't done yet. And that was like, you know, the Spotify thing was when I put out my first record, Spotify didn't exist. So I was like, oh, this would be kind of fun to try to do. Like, you know, I've been building traction on here, and like, I don't know how that stuff works. To my knowledge, nobody like really does, because it keeps changing and they keep like, you know, trying to find new ways to take money from artists or not give them their money back. You know, it's like, but I focused on just like promoting that and doing it that way. So it actually worked out. I was able to get that on a playlist just by like pushing it. So that was the intention with that record and that song.
Wow. Very cool. Very cool. So you mentioned earlier about a single. What is ahead for you in terms of any planned music releases, any notable live performances, maybe that are outside of Texas? Just paint us a picture of the rest of 2024.
I actually don't know if I'm going to be making it out of Texas this year, which I need to do. I know I need to do that, but my goal is to get, last year I did 220 plus shows. So this year I'm going to try to top that. And I think I'm already off to a good start, because having 26 shows in March is a new record for me. Like, the earlier in the year is harder, but there's going to be plenty of new music. Like, that we're working on a new single right now called The Garden, which will hopefully be out maybe midsummer-ish. It'll be out this year, and then there's more tracks to follow. We have three singles so far, and we have, this is a multiple EP project. So, like, we've released three of 29 singles in total. It's all songs that I just had back cataloged, and we're working on one song at a time and doing artwork and music videos. Every song will be a single that'll eventually make up individual EPs, and each song will have its own music video. And so, like, it's just, you know, just streamlining all this content and just getting it out there when we can. And we're not putting a lot of pressure on it, because it's, like I said, working with Dustin, he's got these such like fantastic production pieces and ideas. I want it all to like happen organically and really flow, and give him the mental space for that to work. And it also gives me time to create more songs and stuff too. So, you know, there'll be plenty of content this year, plenty of more shows, and hopefully I can get something on the books to get out of state next year. It's so easy to stay here and just bounce around the state doing shows, but I'm working on it.
And so, audience, in just a minute or two, I'm going to be giving you again all of Jeremy's online destinations so that you can keep up with him, so that when he releases the new music that you just heard him talking about, you'll be in the know, you'll be ready, you'll be on standby. In the meantime, we're going to close today with another one of Jeremy's original songs. This is the one that I mentioned in the intro, was released last August, that won Favorite Mainstream Single in the 2023 Independent Music Network Awards, a track called Life Worth Dying For. Jeremy, before I let you go and I play that song, tell the audience all about this one first, if you would, please.
Yeah, this one is one of those songs that I wrote. Like, I had that line and I wanted to nail it. That was like such a, like, I believe that. Like, you know, I'm one of those people, I wake up every day, I'm like, hey, am I, like, we good? Like, we cool with ourselves? We feel like we're making all the decisions that we can make that, you know, don't just benefit us, but benefit everybody around you as a whole. And like, you know, are you doing all you can for your music, for your craft, for like the people you love? Like, are you living that life worth dying for? Are you making every moment count, every day count? Are you focused? Like, you know, and that's like a morning mantra type of deal. Like, am I content? It's always a yes, man. You know, there's some days that are tougher than others. You know, that's just a given. That's life. But in the grand scheme of things, I think what I hope for everybody is that they can have that, that they can make that the focus, that they have the space to make that the focus. Like, I wish that for everybody. And, you know, it requires, you know, a journey into oneself and constantly doing all this work on oneself and like not changing yourself, but like really just nurturing yourself and growing that individuality within you. And for some people that might be like pursuing music or pursuing a passion, like being a painter and being okay with getting your paintings out there or doing poetry or, you know, being an architect or engineer or something, like whatever you're passionate about, like figure out who you are, figure out what that is, chase it, like live the life worth dying for, make it a life worth dying for.
That's a great way to end the show. I love the encouraging note that we're leaving this on. But Jeremy, let me say thank you first. Great to meet you, and I appreciate you making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment.
It was a pleasure, my friend. Thanks so much for having me, and I can't wait to do it again.
Awesome. Awesome. Good stuff. With that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, guitar player Jeremy Parsons. Again, do visit his official website at jeremyparsonsmusic.com. As I mentioned before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Once you land there, hit the store link to purchase CDs, vinyl, and digital downloads of his original music. You can also get the latter from the likes of Apple Music and other online digital music retailers. Remember to check the shows section of jeremyparsonsmusic.com for details on where and when you can go see him perform live, or for that matter, you can follow him on Bands in Town. You heard the big numbers Jeremy is putting up on Spotify. Give him a follow on there and stream his music. This morning, I followed him on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I'm sure he would appreciate you doing the same. You heard him talk about his animated music videos. Visit his YouTube channel, subscribe, and then watch and like the videos on there. You heard him say there's going to be more on the way. For that matter, tell Jeremy that you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Jeremy and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 years without missing once by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 530. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Jeremy Parsons. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Life Worth Dying For.
I can honestly say, if today was my last day, I'd accept my fate was to be done anyway. 'Cause it is what it is, and we all get what we get. Did you cherish every breath that's for me if nothing's left? Oh, I've lived a life worth dying for. Oh, I smiled and I laughed till I cried. Yeah, I learned and I loved falling and stood back up. When I could, I did all I could do. Don't know about you, but I'll say this for sure. Oh, I've lived a life worth dying for. Yeah, I'm feeling fine. It's just the thought finds me sometimes. Do you think about it some? Maybe I think of it too much. I did not mean to kill the bug. No, that's not why I brought this up. I guess I just hope and pray someday I can hear you say, oh, I lived a life worth dying for. Oh, I smiled and I laughed till I cried. Yeah, I learned and I loved falling and stood back up. When I could, I did all I could do. Don't know about you, but I'll say this for sure. Oh, I've lived a life worth dying for. All I ask one day is wherever I might lay. But these words, they're on display for all that might just come my way. But these words, they're on display for all that might just come my way. Oh,